From Pacific Life Insurance Company, this is the Life Podcast. This podcast is intended for financial professional use only. If you are not a financial professional, please visit our public website at pacificlife.com. Although this podcast is sponsored by Pacific Life Insurance Company, the opinions and views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not necessarily reflect Pacific Life Insurance Company's views on any of the topics discussed. Pacific Life Insurance Company is licensed to issue insurance products in all states except New York. Product and material availability and features may vary by state. And stay tuned after this episode for more important disclosures.
Welcome to this episode of the Life Podcast. I'm Andrea Brandon, your host for today's episode and Director of Value Add Marketing for the Consumer Markets Division at Pacific Life. I lead the development and deployment of thought leadership, sales strategy, and practice management campaigns that support the sale of life insurance and annuities. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, Amy Florian, CEO of Core Genius. Amy is an expert in life transition, so change. She teaches advisors what to do and say when a client experiences the death of a loved one or someone's been diagnosed with a life-limiting illness. She also teaches advisors how to help clients cope with aging, diminished capacity, divorce, retirement, and an empty nest. She's been honored with many awards for her groundbreaking work. LifeHealth Pro named her one of the 20 most creative people in insurance and financial services. And Investment Advisor magazine included her in their list of 25 frontrunners and influencers. Welcome, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
You're most welcome. I'm delighted to be here.
I am so excited to speak with you because I feel like we have similar backgrounds. I'm going to say similar and not exactly the same because, unlike you, I am not a fellow in thanatology, which is something I learned about for the first time last week in conducting research in preparation for this interview. I learned that it means that you've reached the highest level of certification in death and grief studies. I am not a fellow in thanatology, but what I am is a former estate planning attorney. And so I'm very familiar with the taboo that surrounds death. I am keenly aware of the extent to which people will dodge the subject of death, even to their detriment. And like you, unfortunately, I also lost a loved one in my 20s. My mom died when I was just 22, and she was my one viable parent. That shaped who I am today. It shaped my career trajectory. I don't think it's a coincidence that I was an estate planning attorney, and then I went to work for a couple different life insurance companies. The common thread over the course of my 15 to 18 year career has been end-of-life planning. And I feel like that's because death and grief are subjects that I have not had the luxury of avoiding. And the financial services industry can't avoid it either. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've got a great quote from you. I wrote it down because I wanted to bring it up today. You said, "We had a baby boom. Now we're in for a death boom. Mm-hmm. And we are not prepared." Can you expand on that?
Absolutely. And first of all, it's really interesting how the events of our lives shape us and shape our lives. And even those who experience significant loss and grief can sometimes have an uncanny ability to avoid it.
Right. I agree with you.
We all know. How many times have you read the 10,000 baby boomers have been turning 65 every day for years? Which means that every day, 10,000 baby boomers are turning 65, 66, 67, 68. On it goes. The youngest baby boomers right now, born in 1964, are 59 years old. 7 years from now, every single baby boomer will be over 65. Now, a big risk factor for dying is getting older. So right now, there is a baby boomer death every 15.3 seconds in the United States, over 5,600 of them today alone. We're not prepared because we don't learn what to say and what to do when those deaths occur. And what do you say to a widowed spouse or to the adult child? Do you say things like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, call me anytime. Oh, I can't imagine what you're going through. Oh, she lived a good long life. Oh, at least he's no longer suffering. Oh, she's in a better place. You know, those are actually are not helpful or supportive things to say. But we don't know what to say, so we pick up what everybody else does and perpetuate the mistakes. And that lack of training loses clients. Studies have shown that up to 70% of widows switch financial advisors after the husband dies. People who cite those studies usually say, well, the reason is the advisor just didn't build a good enough relationship with the wife ahead of time, right? Now, I have worked with over 2,500 grieving people, and what they tell me, I've got an alternate theory. Because even if the advisor has a good relationship with the wife, what happens if she comes in for that appointment after the funeral and it's really awkward? I mean, you stumble over your standard condolences and then nobody knows what to say and there's this big black gorilla in the room and it's awkward. It's uncomfortable. And when she goes back home, there is nothing like a tragedy to make people come out of the woodwork telling her where else she should go or who else she should talk to. And by the way, I facilitate support groups. They talk to each other and refer each other. So what happens if she gets sent to an advisor who also knows what to do with the money, but he knows what to say to her? He asks good questions, or she asks good questions, really wants to know the answer, seems to have a clue what she's going through. She feels like a person, not a number in a portfolio. Why would she stay with that first advisor? I mean, she would switch. People, and especially women, switch until they find what they're looking for. In another scenario, what happens if it's the last surviving parent who dies, or as you called it, Dre, the last viable surviving parent? Depending on which study you read and how they account for the wealth transfer that's coming with this baby boom, death boom, somewhere between $30 and $68 trillion is going to change generational hands. If you haven't met the adult children till the funeral, you're too late. But regardless of when you met the adult children or whether you know them or what kind of relationship you have with them, what do you say to them? What do you write in a card? How do you follow up with them in ways that increase the chances that this wealth transfer, all these assets, have a better chance of staying with you? And that's just considering deaths. What about divorce? And gray divorce is exploding. It's clear. We're behind the eight ball here. No, we are not prepared.
It's really fascinating. And I often speak with people in the wealth management industry because, you know, it's my business to know their business. And I've noticed a common and alarming trend with some firms. Their clients are dying and it's really hampering their growth. So for example, assume that a firm gets 25 new clients per month. It's not uncommon for me to hear that around 20 of their existing clients are dying in that exact same month. And so that means that up to 80% of their new business is not going to actually translate as growth. I mean, sure, they're going to be able to keep some of those accounts. I would say that based on my conversations, that average is somewhere around 50%, but not all of them. And either way, that's a significant impact to the bottom line. And I guess I say all that to say this. At Pacific Life, we talk all the time about the impact of wealth transfer, all the time. But the stats that have previously, at least for me, only lived in Cerulli reports are now bearing out in real life. And I think it's really fascinating because wealth management firms seem to have a leaky bucket of business. They have a retention problem. And if they're not feeling the impact yet, it's only a matter of time before their bucket springs a leak or two or three. So there's a lot at stake. And I just wonder, have you quantified how your training impacts the bottom line? And if so, what kind of a lift in performance can wealth management firms expect when they employ your strategies?
Sure. Well, first of all, just establish the fact that an advisor's communication and emotional skills are far more important than their financial savvy ever was. I mean, face it, there's hundreds of thousands of advisors who know what to do with the money. That's table stakes. Clients expect that, but they're looking for something more. They're looking for somebody who really gets them and understands them and has that relationship. It's not just the what we call the hard skills. I actually think the emotional component is the hard skills. Affluent clients said that the top reason for staying with their financial advisor is their relationship. Clients rank deep understanding of me and my life and effective communication above portfolio performance, financial planning considerations when they're looking for or deciding who to switch from as an advisor. So again, study after study proves that this emotional and communication factor is even more important than the financial savvy. The question then becomes, does Core Genius help with that? Does Core Genius help make a difference so that advisors stay on the positive side of the equation instead of the negative side of the equation? And the answer to that is yes. While I wish I could quantify all of the overwhelmingly positive, often effusive feedback, subjective feedback that I get all the time, we wanted more concrete data points. So earlier this year, this is very recent, we surveyed all the graduates of a Core Genius Masterclass and asked them how it has affected their performance since. 90% said that Core Genius training had a definitive impact on their ability to retain clients. 78% said that Core Genius training had a definitive impact on their ability to acquire new clients. 100% said Core Genius training had a definitive impact on their ability to communicate with clients during times of life transition. And 90% said that Core Genius training was more important than any other instruction they had received in communication skills with their clients.
Wow.
Obviously, they find some value there. And another data point, we've collected the evaluations from over 1,000 clients just in the last 4 years. And our net promoter rating on a scale of 10 is 9.4. So obviously, advisors find value in Core Genius training. Now, an exact monetary figure, your bottom line is going to go up by this much. Well, that's almost impossible to quantify, because these are behavioral changes that get implemented over time, and there's so many things to implement. The more you implement over time, the more the impact on the bottom line gets affected and significantly grows.
That makes sense. It's accretive, right? Like the more that you learn, the more that you do, you're going to just see that sort of compound and be reflected in the bottom line of your business. Those are great stats, actually. I wasn't sure you were going to have any to share with us. I'm glad I asked. Can you just give us some examples of the types of scenarios where you get tapped in for your expertise? Like, what are some of the most common challenges that advisors face, and how do you help them?
Well, as you alluded to in the introduction, this topic, life transition, is really very broad. Death, of course, is a big one. And, oh, by the way, it's not just old people who die.
Sadly.
As you and I both know, young people die all the time. In fact, death rates are actually increasing among Gen X, Gen Y, and millennials. The median age of a widow in the United States is 59. If we don't know what to say to older clients, what on earth do we say to the younger ones? We don't know. And in line with deaths, I get a lot of questions about those complicated, difficult deaths, like suicide, which is now the second leading cause of death among young adults in this country. We have a suicide explosion going on, and there's so much stigma, there's so much disenfranchisement around the grief for a family after their family member dies from suicide. What do you say to them? How do you handle that? Or opioid overdose is increasing. That knows no economic boundaries. It's not just the person living in the street who dies of an opioid overdose. It's also high net worth families that are impacted by opioids. Another huge area, of course, is divorce, which happens at all ages. And as I said, gray divorce is rising dramatically, and advisors lose, especially women clients, after a divorce. Or the diagnoses. Somebody is diagnosed with cancer. What do you say to them? How do you walk them through that? They've got ALS. They've got Parkinson's. What do you say? How do you walk them through that? And of course, huge one, with the aging population is diminished capacity in dementia. Right now, 6 million Americans have Alzheimer's. One in three seniors, in fact, dies with Alzheimer's. By the year 2050, 12.7 people, almost twice as many, are going to have Alzheimer's. But advisors don't understand even the basics, the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's, because they're not the same thing. They don't understand the difference. They don't know what to watch for. They don't know what to get in place ahead of time. They don't know how to talk to a client when they suspect it may be happening. And by the way, it's not just clients, because the advisor population is aging too. I've talked to firms where the CEO dies of a heart attack in their 50s. And how do you tell the clients? How do you manage the firm? How do you do this? Or an advisor or an executive in the firm seems to be exhibiting signs of diminished capacity. How do you handle that in the firm? It's knowledge that everybody needs to know. And the other thing that most people don't realize, so I don't get asked as often, but I teach about it a lot so that people will realize it, is that grief support skills are necessary even for positive transitions. Your client retires and everybody wants to throw a party. Yeah, but look at everything they have to leave behind in order to retire. Their title and status and prestige, their daily routine, their reason for getting out of bed in the morning, the colleagues that they associate with on a daily basis. I mean, how many people in this profession do not want to retire because they'd have to leave all that behind? See, every life transition, whether it's one that we call negative or one that we call positive, they're all a both and. In every life transition, there are things that we're relieved about, or we're grateful for, or we're even happy about, looking forward to, at the exact same time. There's things we leave behind, things we miss, things we long for, things we grieve. In any transition, if all the advisor does is concentrate on the positive part and keep their perspective and cheer them up and fix it and make them happy, the client knows they don't get it at all. They just don't understand. And you know, when I'm around my advisor, I have to paste on that smiley face like I do with everybody else, because they don't know what to do with the pain. They don't know what to do with the emotion. They don't know what to do with the fact that, yeah, I had a baby and I'm happy I had a baby, but I wish I could just go to the grocery store without carrying a minor U-Haul behind me. I wish I could sleep through the night. One night, just one night, can I sleep through the night?
That is so accurate. I'm glad you mentioned that, like, even things that are fantastic, they're blessings from an objective perspective, they also come with a price tag, which sometimes can be overwhelming.
Yes.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Parenthood is an awesome embodiment of, like, what that means. Because is being a parent great? Is it rewarding on all these levels? Absolutely. But it can also be really taxing and exhausting. And
yes.
All you want is...
Yes.
To just like go to the bathroom in peace. Like it's not that much that you want, but you miss it, right? You miss that privacy. You miss some
yes.
of these things. And so, yes, there are things that you lose even when you're changing, you're transitioning to, you know, appreciate positive things in your life. It all comes with some measure of loss, which should be acknowledged.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like you can connect on a human level. I get it. But I'm also a lifelong learner. And so I know, because I can speak from experience, that embracing a new idea and actually putting it into practice, making it a habit, those are two very different things. And I imagine that advisors may need to build some processes to help them ensure that they implement the new strategies that you've provided them.
Mm-hmm.
At least initially, kind of like, you know, when you go bowling and you've got like the bumper things in the gutter, so as to ensure that like you hit the pins. Do you ever follow up with financial professionals, or maybe even offer them some guidance, like about the types of ways, maybe ingenious ways, that they can ensure that they actually support this new framework that you've provided them?
Yes, absolutely. In implementation is where the rubber hits the road, right? One of the most effective things, and what I recommend to every advisor, is role play regularly. Because we've been saying all the wrong things for decades. And what it does when you when you say the same things or do the same things over and over and over and over, it actually builds a neural pathway in your brain. The only way to counteract that neural pathway is to build a different one. And that takes time, that takes work, that takes practice, that takes hearing the words come out of your own mouth over and over again. So I always recommend that clients or that advisory firms take time, regular time for role play. I'll give you an example. This one, a lot of advisory firms put into effect. Everybody's got someone who answers the phone or who is the most likely person to answer the phone when the client calls in to say that a family member died. Okay, this is your first touch point. What are you going to say? How are you going to answer that phone call? So in the firm, they develop their sort of script based on what they have learned from me. And then what they have to do is role play it with that person. So somebody in the firm role plays the grieving client. They call in, the person answers the phone. They try to do it the way they know they should do it now. And they stumble all over the place. And then you get feedback and you work on it some more. And then you do it again. And then you do it again. And then you do it again. And 3 weeks later, you do it again. And you do it again. And you do it again. So that when that client calls in, it actually is natural. It's comforting. It's, I know exactly what to do in this situation. If you're going to go to the services, based on my protocols for how you interact at the services, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your body language? What are going to be the first things out of your mouth? How are you going to behave at the services? Well, you grab somebody in the office and you role play it out loud, standing up, reaching out your hand to shake. You role play the entire thing. And then in the car on the way to that funeral home, you're role playing it, saying it out loud to yourself over and over and over, so that when you get there, you have a pretty good chance that maybe you'll get at least some of it out. And even if you do make a mistake, because that neural pathway is so strong, you know better than to just stop there. Another thing is making changes in the CRM to include significant dates, to include each firm taking what I've taught them, decides what they're going to do on those dates for which clients. So let me tell you about one advisor. He loves to bake, and his specialties are banana bread and chocolate chip cookies. So he has learned to put into his CRM the date of the deceased spouse's birthday. On that date, he bakes something and hand delivers it to the widowed spouse. And he just goes over, you know, rings the doorbell, says, "Hi, I know that today's a tough one, so I just thought a little comfort food might help you get through. I baked this myself, and I wanted you to have it. I won't take any more of your time today. I know that you may have other things planned, or maybe you're just going to cocoon in bed all day. I don't know. I won't interrupt your day. I just want you to know that I'm thinking about you and all of us at the firm. We're remembering Mike. Because Mike is worth remembering. We're never going to forget him. We're here for you. So here you go. I hope the comfort food helps." Wow. And he said he always plans extra time for those interactions because he's found that the majority of the time that widowed spouse invites him in. And they share some of the comfort food and they talk about Mike and talk about what's going on in her life. Let me ask you something. Is that client ever going to leave him?
I wouldn't.
And what is that client telling her kids about this advisor and how she is treated by this advisor? What is she telling the people in her support groups? Like I said, I facilitate support groups. I have a support group for widowed people. What is she telling those people in the support group? What is she telling her neighbors? What is she telling her hairdresser? I mean, there's people that we talk to. And when you really do something like that, because you've learned to put those dates in your CRM, you've learned how to reach out, you've developed things that you want to do at those times, it's absolutely priceless. Also for writing cards and following up, do you send a card at 6 months? What do you do on the first anniversary? I hope you're following up and not just ignoring them, that all of these things, these protocols that get triggered by the CRM, that they get put into place. And a final example, example is another very common strategy. Because dementia and diminished capacity is increasing so much, I have a set of documents and procedures to get in place well ahead of time. If you wait until you're worried about somebody and then you try to implement some of this stuff, then they feel like you're singling them out. Then they feel like you're, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to go there. I don't believe this is happening to me. In fact, I recommend that clients or that advisors make it part of their intake process. It also helps with converting prospects to clients because as part of the intake process, you say, this is the list of documents that in this firm, we aim to help every client complete or update because we care about more than just the money. We want to protect you. We want to protect your family. We want you to have as much control over your life as possible, no matter what happens. So these are the things that we put in place in this firm for our clients.
When you say that, do you mean, like estate planning related documents, like financial power of attorney and things like of this nature?
Some of them are estate planning documents. Some of them are healthcare documents. Some of them are legacy instruments, things to pass on wisdom and life lessons. Several of them are things that most advisors don't even know about or don't understand. So it's just it's a set of things that goes beyond just the financial. Most advisors ensure that their clients have a will, along with the associated trusts and buy-sell agreements and everything. They make sure their clients have a power of attorney for finance, at least for the investments they have with that advisor. But there's other things too, and especially the healthcare things. If they can explain and prompt clients to get some of those things in place, and then they get to ask about their families, and then they get to meet significant people in their clients' lives, they have the power of attorney for healthcare or for power of attorney for finance on file. Have they ever met the person who's the power of attorney? You can get these documents in place, and then there are ways to ensure that you're meeting these people too. Again, increasing your chance that the assets are going to stay with
you. That's an opportunity to meet a potential, like a prospect, right? Like at the very least, familiarize yourself
Absolutely.
With who it is that you may be interacting with in the future. You know, what's interesting is my financial professional has never asked me about any of, like, a will, a trust, any of the things. I simply get like a quarterly call where, we may discuss how things maybe need to be reallocated, repositioned, and that's it. And yeah, I think I need a new one. It's what I'm saying. That's where I'm arriving.
You need an advisor.
Yes, I think I need a list of your previous clients because, this is not good. This has been a great conversation. It's fascinating. Like I said, I feel like we have a very common background, not exact, but common. And one of the ways that we like to wrap up the podcast is by asking our guests. So I'm going to ask you, what are the top three takeaways that you want listeners to remember about this conversation, if nothing else? Because, we have the memory of a goldfish nowadays. So what are the three things?
First of all, grief is not just from a death. That grief is triggered by every transition, both positive and negative, and all the skills that you learn to support somebody in a negative situation also apply in a positive. You just tweak the language a little bit. The second thing is that the overall understanding that the best way to gain and retain clients is not just to focus on the portfolio and the financial stuff. I mean, if all they want is rebalancing, they'll get a robo-advisor. But the highest level of grief support really differentiates you in the field. This is a third thing. I want to acknowledge that my topic puts people out of their comfort zone. As you said right up top, we don't talk about death or grief. I push people out of their comfort zone. I get that. But if you're willing to be pushed out of your comfort zone, then you can build a new comfort zone. It's life-giving if you're willing to get pushed out of your comfort zone, which maybe that's the takeaway. This is human knowledge. It's what we all wish we knew. It's what we all could make our life better with. And people are afraid because it pushes them out of their comfort zone. So I hope that both personally and professionally, you're willing to get pushed out of your comfort zone, because it makes it better when you do.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, one more question for you, Amy. Where can our listeners find you online?
Well, the best source is my website, which is coregenius.com. So that's C-O-R, and don't put an E on it like the core of an apple. Core is the Latin root of the word heart. And then the second part of my name is genius, which is brain. My tagline is adding heart to the brains of business. I also have a Core Genius YouTube channel. If you go to YouTube and search for Core Genius, it should come up with the Core Genius YouTube channel. And finally, connect with me on LinkedIn. So lots of different ways to find me online, get information, stay in touch. I have a newsletter. You can sign up for my newsletter at the website too.
Great. Thank you. Well, we've only scratched the surface today. Amy's got a lot more to share, and she'll actually be delving deeper into this topic in an upcoming Pacific Life webinar. If you want to learn more from Amy, and I'm sure that you do, be sure to register for our live Whalecast webinar scheduled for October 10th. The link is included in this podcast episode's description, so click and register now. Well, thank you so much, Amy. It has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I am definitely going to register and attend the webinar on October 10th because I would love to learn more and hear more from you. Thanks again for your time.
You are most welcome. As I said, it's a delight to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Life Podcast. We're glad you decided to spend some time with us today. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends. And if you have a minute, we'd appreciate it if you'd leave a review, a rating on whatever app you're listening on. We always love hearing from our listeners. And if you have questions for us here at the Life Podcast, or maybe even a topic suggestion, awesome. We'd love to hear about it. Email us at themailbag@pacificlife.com. We do reply to every message. That's it for this episode. I'm Andrea Brandon. Thanks for listening.
The primary purpose of life insurance is death benefit protection. Life insurance is subject to underwriting and approval of the application and will incur monthly policy charges. Pacific Life is a product provider. It is not a fiduciary and therefore does not give advice or make recommendations regarding insurance or investment products. In order to sell life insurance, a financial professional must be properly licensed and appointed life insurance producer. Pacific Life Insurance Company is licensed to issue insurance products in all states except New York. Product material, availability, and features may vary by state. Amy Florian and Core Genius are not affiliated with Pacific Life Insurance Company. Life Health Pro, the 20 most creative people in insurance, July 29th, 2015. https://thinkadvisors.com/2015/07/29/the-20-most-creative-people-in-insurance. Investment Advisor Magazine Frontrunners, the 2017 IA25, May 1st, 2017. https://thinkadvisors.com/2017/05/01/frontrunners-the-2017-IA-25. In sender, real-time baby boomer, clock September 15th, 2023. http://165.227.242.199/baby_boomer_deathclock.php. Y charts, comma, how can advisors better communicate with clients? December 2019, https://go.ycharts.com/how-can-advisors-better-communicate-with-clients. Vanguard, the evolution of advisors, Alpha, September 2022. https://advisors.vanguard.com/content/dam/fas/pdfs/iarcpp.pdf. Alzheimer's Association, Alzheimer's Disease Facts and Figures, September 2023. https://www.alz.org/Alzheimer's-dementia/facts-figures. Pacific Life Insurance Company's home office is located in Newport Beach, California. This podcast was recorded on September 7th, 2023. The state code for this podcast is 23-172.